their neighbors. And welcome to the Blind Handyman Show, recording right now at the Little Ranch House Studio on Southwood Drive, right here in good old Lufkin, Texas. This is show number 124.
It is.
June 21st, 2005.
Amazing.
And we're going to talk a whole hour on building, repairing, and maintaining, all designed, of course, with the blind in mind. Here are the hosts of the show, ladies and gentlemen. I give you Mr. Don Shaw.
Well, Mr. Tom, how are things? How are things with you on this longest day of the year? We've already made it to the first day of summer, man.
This is the first day of summer. I saw that this morning and forgotten about it.
Yeah.
I kind of thought about it again on the way over here. Man, it was hot.
Or, depending on where you are at in the world, you know, if you was in Australia or somewhere, I guess it could be the first day of winter.
Well, you're right about that. Okay.
Or New Zealand or somewhere, you know, somewhere like
My name is Tom Houston. And here is the producer and creator, ladies and gentlemen, of the Blind Handyman Show, Philip Parr.
I guess Jewel Blanche, if it would, Jewel Blanche, it's the first day of winter, right?
Yeah, it should be.
Because she's in New Zealand, isn't she?
First day
of winter for her, so it's cold winds are blowing and she's battening down the hatches.
Isn't that something?
We're about to die.
Unbelievable, man.
It's about 92. This is not nearly the hottest day. Got it one day last week, it got up to 96 one day.
Oh, yeah.
Boy,
too hot
for me.
Actually, the nights have not been cool, but it was 68 this morning at 6:30.
Yeah, and one night last week, it was cool. Or a few nights ago, two or three nights ago, it was 65, 4 or 5. It's just.
I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Right. I can stand the hot weather a lot better than I can cold weather.
Oh, I'm the opposite. I'm just the opposite. I hate this hot weather. It's just...
Oh, I can handle it better than cold.
Still like that hot weather, huh, Tom?
Yes. I don't want to get out and just baste in the sun.
Just sit in the sun for a while.
Or anything like that. I want a nice shade tree, don't get me wrong. But I don't want to be cold either.
You don't spend much time outside in either the winter or the summer.
Oh, yes, I do. Out in the summer, yes, sir. I've been out every day this week.
Really?
Hours, yes,
sit
sir.
Out on the front deck? Out
on the front deck, in the backyard, back porch. Yeah. Everything, yeah.
You got sun on your back porch, though, don't you?
Oh, I do in the evening time. Now, in the morning time, it's nice and shady. In fact, it's very cool, even if it's a 95-degree day. You're cool in the shaded area.
Great place to drink coffee.
Oh, yeah,
morning,
or anything else.
The ideal. So.
And or anything else you want to do.
And or anything else. Well, I don't go outside much. It's just too hot. I can't handle it. I go sit in my swing a few minutes, 15 or 20 minutes, and I have to go back in the house. I can't.
Well, I've noticed lately that we've had out in Burke, we've had a little breeze going.
Yeah. So this hadn't been bad so far this year.
That's a great deal.
But it's always my thinking, because we always get that first cool front around the 17th, between the 15th and 20th of September. So I always say summer has got three more months now to do whatever it wants to do to me.
Yeah. But then again, on the other hand, talking about the cool temperatures, I talked to list member there, Dave Farron, Sunday afternoon for a few minutes, and it was like low 70s there at that time.
In Philadelphia.
Perfect weather. Yeah.
Yeah, he's in
Johnstown, Pennsylvania, or wherever.
Boy.
It's just really nice weather.
I don't think far from Boop or from Dan, either one.
That's right.
I think they're all. I don't know how we end up with so many people from Pennsylvania on the Blind Like Me list.
It's incredible.
I bet there's a dozen people from Pennsylvania on that list.
There's a lot.
And Pennsylvania's a little bitty state.
it's heavily populated, though. But Philadelphia is a huge city.
It is. You know, speaking of huge cities, did you tell me the other day that San Antonio had now outgrown Dallas? Population?
I don't think I did, no.
Somebody told me that the other day, that San Antonio was now the second largest city in the state of Texas.
Man.
The second largest city?
Whoa. That it's surpassed Dallas, of course.
Oh, I would have my doubts about that. But anyway, I don't know who told you.
Well, I don't know who told me, but I wish I did. I thought it was you, but
it'd be interesting to know that.
But
I don't know.
I know on the ball game the other night when they were playing in San Antonio, the NBA.
Yeah.
The announcer did say that it was in the top 10 as far as largest cities are concerned.
It is.
But Dallas, I mean, Houston's number 4. Dallas is up there, I think, around number 6. I think San Antonio is about 9 or 10.
Well, I read or heard, maybe in Texas Monthly, but someplace, that San Antonio had now surpassed Dallas as the second largest city in the
My goodness, I guess
in the state of Texas.
Good.
I guess we could look that up on the internet.
We'll check that out.
Good
find out. We
and
want to know that.
Next week we will inform everyone.
Well, no, we won't be here next week.
Oh, that's right. We won't. We'll inform you in about 6 weeks.
We're going on vacation. We're taking our summer vacation there, doing the ACB convention, which starts, I think, on the 2nd of July. And so we're going to take 3 weeks off. We'll be back on the, probably to do our next show on the 19th, which will be broadcast on the, let's see, 21st and 22nd of July.
It's going to be Rerun City for
Rerun City for
Rerun and Convention.
Well, we're going to Padre, and they'll be have the convention on for, that'll take up two Saturdays, so... You know, why not? My God, we've done 124 of these. Surely they can find something to run.
I think we're going to run up to Chuck E. Cheese's up in Tyler.
The Chuck E. Cheese at Tyler?
I promised my granddaughter, my five-year-old granddaughter, we'd go up there before the summer was out, so I guess I'll get that done there in that time.
Really? Charlotte, your birthday's in July, right?
Yeah, it's in July. Another year.
It is. Another big year. Another exciting year. I couldn't remember if it's in June or July. Yours and Cletus is right close
ours
together.
Right. They're a couple of days apart.
Cletus is July 25th.
It's down the 22nd, so we're just right there. Man.
Yeah. Years are just how young are you, Don? Sean?
I will be 53, believe it or not.
53?
July the 22nd.
Remember
when
that
was a deal?
Remember when I was sweating 50? Remember when it was 50 was a big deal to him?
You know,
was,
I mean, 50 years old. I mean, my goodness, y'all took it hard.
Yeah, I did. I just wasn't a happy camper.
Well, is that you quit smoking when you were 50, right?
Oh, no, 48.
Has it been that long?
It's been that long. It's hard to believe.
5 years almost.
48.
My
yep.
goodness.
But, yeah, turning 40, which should have been a big deal, really wasn't that big of a deal to me. But it's just damn something about turning 50, man. It just... Yeah. It just.
Well, I had my 15-month anniversary on the 12th of this month of quitting smoking, so I just had a cigarette to celebrate.
A good way to celebrate.
Aren't you officially
what?
A senior citizen at age 55?
55, is that right?
I think it is.
I don't know.
I think it is.
AARP? All
yes,
that.
I get their magazines all the time.
I do, too.
I like it. I mean, I get some good information from them.
I bet they do it for Braille. I bet they do it for blind
people.
Well,
for the older members, the AARP has their magazine in audio format on the Internet.
Is that
just,
right?
And I guess it's in either podcast or streaming form. That you could just download it. So.
Boy, I know I have gotten some useful information from them.
Well, you can play the senior citizen discount at any hotel, and they'll give you 10% off your room, whatever they quoted you or whatever. But you can't do the blind and the senior citizen. They won't let you, never let you do both.
Won't let you play both cards,
I guess we ought to read some email, Houston.
Okay, all right. Here's one that says, good morning, folks.
Well, look at that.
Oh, man.
Do homeowners clean their own gutters? Or do blind homeowners clean their own gutters? I should have turned that off.
We've had lots of discussions about those on the list.
Or do they hire someone to do it for them? I'm asking this because it does not sound particularly hard to clean a gutter. Now, the only difficulty for me is to be able to position the ladder correctly in a way that it rests on the pins holding the gutter rather than on the gutter itself.
Yep.
If the ladder is rested on the gutter, there is a danger of crushing it.
That's true.
How do you folks handle the ladder positioning without sighted help? Cheers. Abraham, is that the way you say it?
Abraham?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you can feel it there with the end of the ladder where you are.
I thought I unplugged it. I just unplugged that phone.
Oh, man, I can't believe that.
How could that phone be ringing?
Hello?
Yeah, that was my deal. Maybe when you hit the end of the gutter, of course, with the end of the ladder, you would know it. By the way, it would feel when you touch it against the gutter.
You would think so.
But I've heard also you can get these extensions to put on the end of your ladder that would just kind of... extend the ladder out away from away from the gutter.
I happen to have a response from someone here. Bryce writes, if you own a single-story home, it's no problem. Take a 7-foot ladder and use your cane to locate the gutter and place the ladder accordingly to the gutter. I own a 2-story home, and along the front of the house, there's an area low enough that I can clean them with a 7-foot ladder. Now, the upper gutters, I have one of my sons do it for me once a year. He gets on top of the roof with a water hose with a pressure nozzle and blows everything out.
That sounds like
so,
a plan.
So Bryce is taking care of business.
Yeah.
Now, this guy said, locate the gutter with your cane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which would be good. I mean, that would be...
Which you could do, but I could stick the end of the ladder up there, and I'd know where I was.
Yeah, that's what I said. You could tell by the ladder touching against it, but it would be gutter rather than roof. And you would just pretty much know, I guess, that the gutter is just pretty much going to run along
the edge. And if you stand the ladder, like, you know, if you don't lean a long extension ladder against the gutter, stand the ladder up almost straight where there really won't be a lot of weight against the gutter if you do that.
Uh-huh.
You know, kind of, the ladder is not, you know, you're in no danger of falling backward, but the ladder is almost up straight. So there's really not a lot of weight on the gutter, and you can get up there and clean an area, and I guess you can then just move down. But the easiest way to clean a gutter would be get on top of the house, wouldn't it?
You would think so, but I don't know. If you're just standing there on a ladder and it's a single-story house.
For a single-story house, I would almost tend to want to use a stepladder and not lean the ladder against the...
Okay.
If you had one.
Yeah.
It would be just as
easy.
You
cleaned my gutters out for me one time, Shaw.
Yeah.
And just used the ladder and then just reached in there with his hand and threw everything down on the ground.
Yeah.
Of course, the thing to do would be call Abacon Gutters and...
Well, yeah.
Chattanooga or Birmingham area, ladies.
The Chattanooga or Birmingham area, and they'd clean your gutters. They'll sell you gutters you don't have to clean.
Exactly.
That's right.
And if you mention my name, I'll get a commission.
They won't charge you anymore.
What a deal. Yeah, they won't charge you anymore, huh?
Yeah. Gutter cleaning for blind people would be something you could do without, I mean, it'd be, if you'd know, you're going to know where you were. If you're used to walking with a cane and feeling around with a cane, then you stick the ladder up there, you're going to know what you're into.
Well, I notice on your gutters, on your house, Phil, you have screens covering them,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that works to a degree, doesn't it?
That works to a degree. In other words, all the dirt goes down in the gutter, and the screen traps the pine straw and stuff. So you could really, if you had gutters with screens on them, you could take something and just rake along there and rake all that stuff off of the top of the gutter.
Yeah.
Instead of actually getting up there and cleaning it out. But if you're used to moving around with a cane, then you're going to know where you are. But one of the things you need to do before you start cleaning gutters is figure out where the electricity comes in your house.
Yep. Don't want to touch your ladder.
You don't want to get up there and get into that. So you need to know that before you start out there fooling around.
Don't want to go to the happy hunting ground.
No, you don't, because we'll lose someone on the list, and we need them all.
Yeah, we do. We need them all.
Anyway, go ahead.
And then one more thing I want to add to that is while we're talking about the dangers maybe of gutter cleaning or the hazards of gutter cleaning would be just, you know, you kind of might want to be kind of keep an ear out for those wasps buzzing around your head kind of when you're
yes, sir,
up there cleaning. So, you know, that's always a possibility,
it
too.
It would be easy to get into something like
it
that.
It would.
I've done that two or three times.
Natural place for a wasp nest.
Any blind person that's a ham that's putting up antennas or doing anything like that, you're going to get into... Well, I've done it two or three times in my lifetime, gotten into a little nest of...
Yeah,
of a hornets one time.
Oh, man.
God almighty, damn! It was pretty bad.
Yeah, that'd be pretty tough.
Hornets will hurt you. I mean,
they're bad. Yellow jackets and hornets.
The deal is, when a wasp stings you, they lose their stinger and they die. But the problem is they don't know that.
Yeah,
I don't believe they do.
They're not aware of it. You are, but
yeah.
All right, go ahead.
Here's a guy with a 1-year-old air conditioner that met with an accident, falling out of the window.
That's not good.
It was a sighted person, not me, who accidentally let it fall. My question is, this mostly plastic chassis is cracked. Is it safe to run this machine, which fell probably 5 feet?
Yeah, if it doesn't run water back in the house.
Yeah, that's the biggie.
That'd be the thing. If the pan is intact enough to dispense the water, because they're all the way air conditioners work, or the way I think they work, or the way I've been told they work, is they cool your air by removing the humidity from your air. So they're all going to have some water. They're all going to have a pan under them, and water will flow, so they need to be tipped backward a little bit. If it doesn't pour water in the house, run it. I don't see why not. Do you?
So no, the thing to do would be plug it in and see.
Plug it in. Mm-hmm. Turn it on and see what happens. I want to make another comment while we're talking about air conditioners. I saw a really neat thing on one of the channels the other night. One of the home channels was...
Yeah.
It's an air conditioner that's got a 6-foot hose, and I would say this hose is flexible, and it's probably, oh God, maybe three inches around or so.
Yeah.
And the air conditioner is on wheels, and it sits in your room, actually in the room, and then you run this flexible hose back from the air conditioner to the window, and it's you raise your window and put it down over this thing that holds this hose. In other words, the air conditioner can be inside, and it vents the hot air outside through this flexible hose, which I think is a fine idea.
And also runs the water out.
And so. Runs the water out also. It's quiet. You can't hear it. And
so you can have an air conditioner in any room.
In any room of your house. That's the idea. You want to change rooms, open the window, take the hose out and the frame around it, and move it to the next room and open the next
window. But you know, even 20, 30 years ago when I lived in Houston, Sears, bless their heart, made a little air conditioner that was a one person could lift, and you could set it in your window, bring the window down on it, slide the panels on each side out, and plug it up, and bingo, your
room. I've seen them.
You know, I had a couple of those. My big house I lived in Houston, in the middle of August, the air conditioner went out. And it was a gas air conditioner. Remember when they were pushing gas air conditioners?
Yep.
Well, don't buy one, folks. Don't do it. Oh, man. This was a gas air conditioner, and it went out, and I couldn't find anybody to work on it, and it was hot. So I went to Sears and bought two of those little Windy units so the kids could sleep and so we could sleep because we weren't.
Yeah, you know, that
it
would
was,
be.
It was wild. It was because in Houston, Texas,
in
folks,
August it was
hot.
Rough.
I mean, it was. I spent a lot of time at the radio station.
I bet.
That
yeah.
point in time. Anyway, is that music I hear?
That's music you hear. Yes.
All right. Our guest name is
Paul.
Paul Jackadin. Paul Jackadin
is our guest, and he does Braille Writer Repair from New York, Brooklyn, I think.
And also he's a cabinet maker, right?
Yeah, that's right. Cabinet making.
We're going to have him on in just a few minutes. And stand by. More of this is the Blind Handyman Show. Back in a minute. Hang on.
Listening to the Blind Handyman, the talk of the blind community. Our email address is blindhandyman@hotmail.com. If you would like to be a part of the show, leave us a phone number and we will contact you soon. Now, here's more of today's show with Phil Parr.
Well, hello then. Welcome back to the Blind Handyman Show. Paul Jackadin is our guest. How are you, sir?
Very good. Yourself, sir?
We're doing quite well in old hot Texas on a summer afternoon. You are, where are you located?
In Brooklyn, New York.
Brooklyn, New York. You had that accent.
I've never been able to lose it. Yes, I do.
Well, you've lived there all your life, isn't that
yes,
right?
Yes, I have.
And so,
right.
So you don't need to lose it, do you?
Nope.
You know, I spent a week in New York about 3 years ago, and I thought, what a great city for a blind person to live in because everything is there. There's a grocery store, you know, within two doors of your building. There are restaurants galore. The subways are easy to find, and there's people all around all the time to help you or else. And I guess you find it the same way, right?
Yeah, that and in addition, the stores are a lot of stores are open 24 hours a day. The subways yeah. run 24 hours, so I mean you can
yeah,
freely get from point A to point B. You know, any time you want.
Yeah, we talked about this. People in New York do things. In Texas, we go to the grocery store once a week and we buy tons of stuff. And people in New York, they decide kind of on the way home what they want and they go buy a little store, pick it up, take it home, and cook it.
Which is great.
It's true.
You know, which would be wonderful. And if you, what is your level of sight? Are you total?
Yes, totally.
Totally. Well, we got three of us here. Don Shaw's got a little sight.
Okay.
But we're all just gathered around the microphones, having a cold beer and doing the blind handyman
show. Hoping for the best.
Hoping for the best is right.
Very good.
Now, you are in addition to your Braille writing repair, you are a cabinet maker, you say?
Correct. I took a course. Back in the early in 1972, there was an ad in the newspaper. I just took the course. It was designed for someone who would go and take a course and build a piece of furniture there and show it off for the rest of their life. And I took the course and learned. I just absorbed like a sponge.
Uh-huh.
And from then on, I just kept building.
That'd be great.
And you would tackle a set of cabinets if someone showed you that could explain what they wanted.
Absolutely. I've gutted two homes completely, down to the foundations, rewired them, sheetrocked and framed and
yeah.
did it all.
Put in insulation, built the cabinets and all that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
Wow. And what age are you, if you don't mind us asking?
Not at all. 52.
52. So you're quite mechanically inclined.
I never thought I would fall into the category of mechanically inclined. I never thought that label would apply to me until I started tinkering with Braille writers.
Yeah.
And I've discovered that it requires a lot of mechanical savvy, a lot of patience,
mm-hmm.
and just a lot of interest, which I've managed to develop a chunk of all three of them.
Now, I've never owned a Braille writer in my life, and I know very little about them, so I'm probably going to ask some dumb questions. But even if I knew, I'd probably ask some dumb questions anyway. How many manufacturers of Braille writers are there?
Oh.
Several.
I thought I did my research. I don't know.
But there's more than one.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. There's Perkins.
Perkins is the most famous, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
I plead ignorance on the answer to that question. I know there was a company in England that manufactured one. There was another company that manufactured what they called the Taj, which it's my understanding was a dismal failure because it was made mostly of plastic.
Uh-huh.
And the plastic did not acclimate well to the atmospheric changes, temperature-wise and stuff.
Okay.
And it wasn't a big hit. It wasn't very successful.
So, but it wouldn't be true that if you learned one to fix one Braille writer, you've learned to fix them all.
I shouldn't think so at all. I specialize in the only Braille writer I have any level of proficiency with is the Perkins Brailler.
Is the Perkins Brailler.
Correct. And that's been around since 1951.
Yeah.
And in fact, I own the 212th Braille writer ever manufactured by Perkins in...
really?
In 1951.
That's wild.
Man,
it works absolutely beautifully.
Yeah.
I've got a couple of statistics to share with you.
Okay.
In the Perkins Brailler, there are 649 moving parts.
Whoa.
There are 397 different moving parts. In any Perkins Brailler.
Mm. Wow, I had no idea.
They've been paralleled to a Swiss watch in terms of their precision and the workmanship required to manufacture them.
Mm.
I've heard that. The tolerances have to be just perfect to be. I mean, there's so many things
that
are...
the gentlemen who trained me, they were all assembled by hand at Howell Press. And the gentleman who trained me said they used to have, casual competition amongst the employees. And he assembled, in an eight-hour period, he assembled 12 rail riders.
Whoa.
From start to finish.
Man.
To me, I think in about a week I could maybe put one together.
Yeah, that is just, that's amazing.
Yeah.
But there's a lot more to them than I've never owned one, so I don't know much about them. I've heard people use them, noisy things, but I've never owned one. So they're not basically like a typewriter? I mean, they...
They have seven keys used for brailing, and one for backspacing, and one for page advancing.
Yeah.
And with the one key in the middle advances just a space.
Yeah.
And any one of the other six keys represents just a dot.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they work, when they work like a finely honed machine. The biggest killer to the braille rider is dirt.
Yeah.
And I've had a braille rider just recently. I repaired one that was probably from the 1970s. The person had used a dust cover on it all their life. They've had it since the 70s. When I took that braille rider apart, I half thought it was a joke. I thought that someone just maintained this and someone was sending it to me as a goof. It was immaculate inside.
Wow.
And I asked the person, I said, to what do you attribute this? And they said, well, I've always used a dust cover all the years I've had it. When I'm not using it, I cover it up. And there was no better illustration of just how essential a dust cover can be.
Mm-hmm. Keep all that dirt out.
Because unfortunately, the area just in back where the paper goes, there's no way to protect that from unwanted dust and debris getting in there.
Yeah, it's just open.
Exactly, yeah. And it has to be because the carriage has to move from left to right.
Right.
And that's the heart of the machine, because in back of there are rods that, when the key is pressed, the rods mechanically manipulate the pins, which are in the carriage, and they force the dots to be embossed.
Yeah.
So when grunge and everything gets built up there, that's... The chronic complaint is the carriage doesn't move all that well, and it can't, because by the nature of the design of the machine, there has to be very little tolerance. Otherwise, the carriage will wiggle and jiggle and just jam up. So there's very little room for error. So when dust builds up, it prevents it from moving.
And then I guess if the parts have any oil on them from the manufacturing, that when the dirt mixes with that, it just gums up.
Yeah.
Well, that's one of the first things I do when I take a braille rider apart. I completely I blow it dry, blow it with a compressor to get any loose particles out. Then I clean it with alcohol and get it squeaky clean, if you will, and then let that dry. And then apply. There's three things that Howell Press recommends: watch oil, clock oil, and then lubricant grease, which you apply to the right places, and then the braille rider just works like a charm again.
Now, of course, a lot of blind people have dogs. By the nature of being blind, they have seeing eye dogs. And I have noticed, I don't have any seeing eye dogs, but I have two dogs that live in my house.
Okay.
And I have also a separate building, which is where my studio and shop is. I find that those filters, the house filters, every 2 or 3 weeks are full of dog hair.
Right.
So the same thing would happen to the braille writer. I mean, it'd be, you know, you'd have the chance of, dog shed and dogs, that's just the way dogs are.
Well, I worked on one braille rider. I swear you could have assembled a puppy from all the hair.
Is that right?
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I'm a dog lover, so I wasn't particularly grossed out, but it wasn't one of my more pleasant days.
I imagine not. Now, braille writers, the only one I've ever seen came in like a box, like a cabinet. And when you put the top on, the top would be latched down and it would be secure.
Right.
Do all of them come like that? I guess they're doing.
No, I guess, I don't know if you call it a vinyl case, or it's a hard...
This was a hard shell case.
Yeah. Now, that's wonderful if people would keep their braille rider in that when they're not using it. But more often than not, it's easier just to leave the braille rider out of that case.
Yeah.
But a vinyl cover is very easily available from HowlPress, and they're affordable. I think they're like $10, and they just go over the Braille writer, obviously, when not in use.
Yeah.
And that prevents so much dust and everything from getting in. The other big killer to a Braille writer is the rubber tube, the rubber paper roller that the paper rolls past. People generally, if that rubber tube is exposed to a lot of sun or a lot of just basically elements, it tends to cause that rubber, especially on the older tubes, to crack. And once that rubber on the tube cracks, it's basically useless as far as rolling paper in evenly.
Yep. I had one back in the 70s that did just, I know exactly what you're saying, because I ended up junking it for that reason.
Sin. I mean, just about anything on a Braille writer can be repaired. If it was made from a bunch of parts, so just all you need to do is
get new parts
in it.
Yeah.
But it's a question of how affordable or how much it would cost.
Yep.
I mean, the rubber tube, the paper roller, is I think $28, but so much of the Braille writer has to be dismantled to get that one little part out.
Put that rubber tube on.
Exactly. I mean, the true sin is there's a thing called a piece of felt that the carriage rides along a tube. And that piece of felt, I think, cost about 60 cents. But to get to it. That carriage out takes hours of dismantling.
Yeah. You know, I had an older brother, he's passed away now, that had a little pocket Braille writer of some kind that used little paper tape or Dymo tape that he just fed in. Had six little keys and a space bar in the middle, and it was small enough you could almost put it in a coat pocket. Have you ever seen one of those?
No, how interesting. I had a friend of mine who just showed me some antique Braille writers from the 30s and the 40s.
Really?
Oh, man.
And one of them was very, very interesting. It was small. I don't remember the manufacturer, but it was like built onto its own little base, which gave it some weight and gave it some substance when it was put on a desktop, and it somewhat resembled the Perkins Brailler, but in some ways it didn't, because the whole carriage, the whole body of the machine would move, and the base just anchored it down.
And
it was just very, very interesting.
So this was just somebody's idea, or they never did really manufacture those, or what?
I guess they must have manufactured. Yeah. They were made in Germany. I confess I don't know the name of the manufacturer, but I guess they weren't a big hit, because the only company that really... You only really hear about the Perkins Braillers.
That's all you hear about.
That's the biggie.
They sent you to Perkins you decided you wanted to do this, and so they sent you to Perkins to learn these.
Correct. I wanted to do it, and the way it started years ago, my wife said to me, can you fix my Braille writer? And I said, well, I knew nothing about it. And I said, well, yeah, I guess I can. And I made the fatal mistake of tinkering with it. And I sprayed some WD-40 here and WD-40 there, and that Braille writer worked beautifully.
For about three days.
For about a week.
Yeah, for about a week.
Exactly. Till the WD-40 started drying up and sucking up any dust in the air.
Yep.
And she, as only wives can be, she tactfully pointed out to me that it was now worse than it had been before I tinkered with it.
Uh-huh.
So I felt responsible, and I looked up the people at HowlPress, and a fine gentleman there has been there for 43 years. Took me under his wing, and I'd love to say he taught me everything he knows, but that would have taken probably in excess of 43 years.
Yeah.
He taught me a great deal.
Well,
a great deal.
Not knocking WD-40. In some instances, it is a wonderful thing to use, but don't put it in the track of your sliding door.
Of course.
Damn it. Remember that.
Yeah.
Somebody was telling me it's 90% kerosene.
Is
it? It's only 10% oil or something.
Really?
I mean, it gets you out of a jam quickly.
Yes.
But you pay the price.
Oh, the door slid fine for about a week, and now it takes, I have to call someone when I want in. It's not quite that bad, but I learned my lesson. But it worked fine. Boy, for about a week, it worked fine.
Oh, yeah.
But there are times, there are places where, and, Gordon Vick telling me all the time, put some dry lubricant in it.
graphite is another thing that works. But from what Hal Press says, they don't recommend anything except watch oil in certain areas, lock oil in certain areas, and then the louvre grease in the third areas where the keys are manipulated.
And they tell you where to put these different things.
Not only do they tell you where, but they tell you how much. And I remember the first couple of times I did them, the guy said, you know what, at this rate, you're going to go through these little 2-ounce bottles of oil very quickly. He said, you're using way too much. And as I look back on it now, I mean, I could have done a dozen Braille writers with the amount I used in just one.
What do you do? You just put it on a Q-tip, or what do you do?
You put it on a little, well, I have, I use three different kind of brushes. I use a quarter-inch brush, a half-inch brush, and then like a really mild, like almost like a toothbrush. Yeah. And that's what I, well, the toothbrush I use to clean the areas with, the areas where there's literally caked up grunge.
Yeah.
And then the oil I put on with either the quarter inch brush or the half inch brush, and I just what this gentleman taught me to do is dip the oil in your bowl and then just kind of tap it, dangle it, let the drops go off it, so you're really just brushing oil on, you're not painting it on. Which is what I had done in the past.
I tend to do the same thing. Yeah. We want to put it on until we can feel it.
Exactly.
Till the blind guy can, and I learned from this engineer that was repairing a cart machine they use at radio stations to run commercials on, and he would take a toothpick and dip it in the oil, and then he would just hold this toothpick over and kind of drop a drop of oil down in the motor, just one little drop.
Man.
And I thought, that's not going to help. But it did. It stopped the little noise that the motor was making. It would, but
we would have gone through a whole bottle of it.
Blind people would.
That noise had long since stopped.
We want to do it where we can feel it, where we can actually see what we've done. We don't understand being blind. Now, do people send Braille writers to you, or do you have a shop, or what do you have?
Yes, I do. I have my, well, it's funny. The front of my house is my woodworking shop, and completely isolated from all the dust and everything is the back of my basement, which is my Braille writer repair center.
Really? It would have
and
to
I,
be.
And I get probably 10 or 12 Braille writers a week.
No kidding.
That's
great. And from all over the country.
That's super.
but you have a woodwork shop there in your house.
Yes, I do.
Heated and cooled woodwork shop.
Heated and cooled by the outside temperature. I mean, it's in my basement. I've got doors there. You know, it's a comfortable work area.
Is it big enough to bring a piece of plywood in?
Oh, yes. Through my basement. That's the only way I can, because my wife told me, you're not bringing that. Once the house was renovated, she said, you're not bringing that through the living room anymore.
No more of that.
That comes down my basement stairs. It's not roomy. You don't have a lot of room to maneuver it. But if you're careful, you can get it down without scratching it.
Yeah. Are you still doing some woodwork? Are you still building?
When there's no Braille writers, I switch to woodworking. My wife has several chores for me now, plus some customers I have.
And you build, what would you build? You would build actually some furniture for people if they wanted?
Yes, I built a great big wall unit. That was my most recent customer for someone. It was a large unit, 7 foot tall, 3.5 foot wide with two pocket doors on top for the stereo, the entertainment center, and then two small accompanying bookcases, 30 inch wide.
Yeah,
like 14-inch deep.
Built these out of what sort? What kind of wood?
Those are oak with cherry complements along, like cherry molding along the side.
Yeah, cherry trim.
Correct.
To tell us what you have in your wood shop, just for
our
own reference.
I have a Craftsman. I don't know the model number. It's the largest Craftsman table saw they make. I think it's a 12-inch blade.
Wow.
I can go 2 7/8-inch. Thickness on the lumber. I have a rough drill press. It's a 5-speed drill press. I use it very, very infrequently. I use it only to drill out the 35-millimeter hinges on doors. That's just about all I use it for.
Uh-huh.
And I have a Makita 12-inch chop saw. I call that my wannabe radial arm saw.
Yeah.
I don't have the room for a radial arm saw. Nor do I really have the need, because with the chop saw, I can comfortably cut anything 12 inches wide.
Yeah.
And if I have to, and there's a need for precision, I can flip it over and do
Yes.
You know, the
I know.
Other way. So I can
now,
do 24
but is this a miter saw? I mean, does it move side? Can you lean it over and do it?
Oh, yes. You can do okay. You can miter it either way, left or right.
Okay. All right.
And it's the sliding. It's got the two rails, so you can slide it out 12 inches.
Oh, really?
Well, you can slide it out 6, and then you have the 6 inches of the blade.
Yeah.
So you can cut something 12 inches wide.
So,
and then I have my routers, which that's always use my routers until maybe, I guess, 6 or 7 years ago, someone said suggested a table saw, and I said, oh, no, table saw is too dangerous. But then I just started playing. I had just some countertop little table saw that I played with.
Yeah.
And I saw that if I was careful with it, it was a lot faster
sure
than
it
the
is.
Router.
Yes.
Because with the router, what I did was I took the end plate off the base, and I would screw. I had made different pieces of wood, half inch thick, 5.5 inches wide, let's say 2 foot, 3 foot, 4 foot in length. And I would screw them to the base of the router. And then I would put a fence, and a straight edge, and I would measure what I needed. So if I needed a 16-inch piece off a sheet of plywood, I'd measure 16-inch from the bit, put my fence there, and I'd cut the wood, you know, flawlessly, no curve, exactly.
You were cutting wood with the router?
Yes.
Well, which could be done, I guess, but...
Oh sure, and you're just progressively lowering the quarter-inch bit.
I know, I understand.
Now, it works perfectly... Except it generates a mountain of dust.
And it takes a long time.
It's so slow.
And it's noisy as hell.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. I got these headsets. My wife got me these headsets with the noise abating thing in it where it automatically kicks off the noise if it's over 80 decibels.
Yeah.
So those are great.
Yeah. So those noise-canceling headphones.
Yeah, they're awesome. Peltor, I think, is the brand I have.
But then you decided that you were afraid of a table saw? You were afraid?
Yeah. I was afraid of the unknown, so I didn't know really what the table saw was like.
That's amazing, because that's when I decided to do a little work, that's the first thing I bought was a little table saw.
Yeah.
Because I wanted, I got tired of not being able to cut a straight line. And with a table saw, of course, you can. This was a little cheap, very cheap Craftsman table saw, but I still have it. I have a dado blade in it now.
Now, see, I can't imagine. I spoke to somebody who, ironically enough, was somebody I bought a Braille writer from.
Yeah.
I buy broken or unwanted Braille writers, and I've bought a whole slew of them.
Uh-huh.
I rebuild them. Sometimes it takes me 2 or 3 Braille writers to make one work,
uh-huh.
But that's what I do. I was talking to this gentleman, and he said, I couldn't be bothered trying to fix it. He said, I'm a cabinet maker. That's what I know. So we took care of the transaction about the Braille writer in about 30 seconds, and we spent the next hour talking about woodworking.
Uh-huh.
And he said, I can't imagine using a router. He said, I do all my work on my table saw with a dado blade.
Yeah.
I said, no, isn't that funny? I can't imagine taking my blade guard off. But, of course, you have to if you're gonna use the dado blades. I couldn't imagine that. So it's just
depends on what you've done in the past.
I've got this dado blade in this Craftsman, but I have another table saw, another little. It's not a big one. I think it's a 10-inch blade that I use just as a table saw.
Right.
But I've got a router also. I have a handheld router, and I also have a router table.
I built a router table, but then I bought which worked fine for me for many many years. But then I bought this incredibly clever router table where one half of it elevates to up to a 90-degree angle.
No, I've never seen that.
So you can literally, any bit, even a straight bit, can make, let's say, a 45-degree cut in wood.
Okay.
Man.
Oh, it's really, really clever.
That
and you can do raised panel bits with it.
Whoa, man.
I've tinkered with doing raised panel doors, but never any real success.
Yeah, well, you've got to have a thing with more than one blade to do those really successfully, don't you?
Well, you have to have the set, and I have the set, and I thought I had the patience, but I guess I just didn't have an indefinite supply of lumber to play with. Because
well,
once you start messing up a few things.
Well, yeah, you wouldn't want to try it with a nice piece of oak. You'd
want to
do it on some plywood first.
This friend of mine works in a cabinet-making plant, and it's also very tempting for me because on his lunch hour and stuff, I just give him measurements, and he sends me down doors whenever,
Really?
Wait 2 or 3 months but I get what I need.
Oh, what a deal.
Yeah, he'll do
it. There's no incentive for me to do it myself.
Yeah, no kidding.
I've often thought, I think I could do a raised panel door. I never have, but I've looked at them, the coping stick and the way they're put together, and I think I could. I guess I'll just keep on thinking that because I no longer have the energy to
never
do it.
Go
well,
and try.
He sent me scraps. I mean, I see exactly how they go together.
Yeah, yeah.
I just have not been able to make one that I would be proud of.
Yeah, that's the deal. I've never made anything.
That's the deal, yeah.
I've built a lot of things, but I've never made anything you could put in the living room still.
Wow.
I've built a lot of boxes and a lot of shelves and a lot of bookcases and stuff. I've never made, you know, and Don Shaw and I built picnic tables by the jillions one time.
But never a centerpiece.
But never is the, I've never built an entertainment center. I think I could. I know the principles and I've got the tools. I just never... I don't know. But anyway, I admire you, sir, and you seem to be living life to the fullest, and I wish I'd known you when I was in New York.
Well, if you ever come to New York, look me up.
Well, we are talking now about going to New York and then going on to London and flying back to Houston.
Okay.
And if we do, I will. We stayed in New York. We took the Staten Island Ferry. We went to Carnegie Deli and ate. We did all the touristy things.
Go ahead.
Yeah, give us, before we get off.
Okay.
Give us your, if you want extra business, I don't know that we can send you any, but we might as well try. Give us your mailing address and phone or whatever you want to get.
Something or whatever.
My name is Paul Jackanin, Jackanin. Uh-huh. The mailing address is 44 Powers with a P, Powers Street, Brooklyn, New York, 11211. The phone number is 718-749-3774. I buy broken, unwanted Braille writers for anywhere between $50 and $75. I sell refurbished Braille writers for $350 with all brand new pressure rollers in them, and they're guaranteed. And a cleaning starts at $65 and up, depending on what parts are necessary. And I pride myself on a 5 to 7 day turnaround time on repairs.
All right. What a deal.
Did you give a phone number?
Yeah.
Yes, I did.
Okay, but do that phone number one more time.
718-749-3774.
And you'll answer the phone or your wife will, one of the two.
Exactly.
Good deal, sir. Yeah. I plan on seeing you in less than a year, Paul. Thank you, sir, for being our guest this afternoon.
Gentlemen, thank you.
All right.
Thanks,
Paul.
Have
a good evening.
Very good. Back with more in just a minute. More of the Blind Handyman Show. Hang on.
Subscribe at yahoogroups.com. That's blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com.
The thing I like about the Blind Handyman is I'm the moderator, and I can delete you if I want to. So don't get out of line. Stay on topic.
That's blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com.
is the Blind Handyman. Be sure and tell a friend about the program and email us often from blindhandyman@hotmail.com. Now, here's more of the show with Don Shaw.
Okay, we're back. You know, it was funny when Paul was talking about the Braille Writer repair there and talking about the Braille Writer with the bad roller.
Yeah.
With the rubber that cracked and came off of the roller part. That back in the 70s, of course, I was young, 20s, had this Braille Writer and did exactly that. The rubber started peeling off the roller, in fact.
So you just chunked it.
Of course, you couldn't turn it to turn the paper in or do anything with it. And at that time, didn't have a clue about taking it apart. So, yeah, basically just ended up just throwing
just
away the whole damn thing.
Put it
just
in the dumpster, and he'd have probably fixed it for $75.
Could have fixed it.
And you bought another one. Because you were using, when I first met you, a line of Braille.
Yeah, before I got into a computer, I did use Braille.
You were using lots of Braille, because I remember calling you and giving you a phone number, and I could hear you working out.
Taking notes and things, sure. Yeah.
Well, a lot of people do. Susie uses Braille. I mean, that's how she keeps all her records and everything.
Yeah.
For a lot of them. And she's fast with that tablet and stylus.
She is quick with that tablet and stylus.
I kept that tape. I meant to play that on here sometime. Her getting email addresses and dots. Sounds like sounds like a woodpecker. I mean, she's quick.
That's something I've never learned to write with one of those. Those were just a little bit before the time that would have been.
With a tablet and stylus?
Yeah.
What'd they teach you at the blind school when you first went there?
I just went straight to the Braille Writer.
They had Braille Writers then.
Never learned to do the slate and stylus. I know it's backwards. It's just you make the dots in backward, I guess, compared to what? But
you write the wrong way. I mean, you write right to left. What's this? This is your right, isn't it? You write right to left, and you read left to right.
Yeah. See where the Braille Writer writes in the right.
It just writes it.
You just left to right.
See, I've never tried to use a Braille Writer in my life. My brother had one, and I don't know what I let happen to it. When he died, I was 16, 17, 18 years old and never liked Braille anyway, so it didn't mean anything to me. And I don't know what I did with it. I don't know where it went, where I left it in an apartment or something.
Man, it would have been something to have now. It'd probably be worth a dollar or two now.
Probably would be, because this was back in the 50s, Braille Writer.
Yeah.
But, of course, he'd come home. What they did, Friday afternoon, he did a show on Kite on KITE in San Antonio on Saturday afternoons, and they'd read him the commercials on tape, and he'd sit there and braille the commercials. He'd spend about an hour brailing the commercials.
Whoa.
That he was going to read the next day, and he'd read them in braille live, you know.
Goodness.
You know, Lorma's Department Store in downtown San Antonio is offering, you know, he's sitting there reading.
Yeah.
You could hear his hands sliding back and forth.
Yeah.
Reading those braille commercials. And he could do that. He was fast enough to do that.
Yeah.
And he did it on a Braille Writer. So he had a Braille, but I never did fool with it because I didn't like Braille, and, you know, I was stubborn little Phil. I wasn't learning anything they were trying to teach me.
So you didn't do the Braille Writer or the slate and stylus?
No, I did slate and stylus. I've got a slate and stylus somewhere.
So you basically could write a line or two with a slate.
I could write a little bit with a slate and stylus. If I had to, I might be able to write my name. But I just couldn't. I never was very good at it. But I've got a slate, a tablet. We call it a tablet and stylus. I've got one somewhere, and I think it's in that desk in the shop in there. You could probably look around in there and find a tablet and stylus in there if you looked hard enough. Don't look.
Yeah, don't.
Don't try it. But I've got one somewhere that I kept that left over from some. I used to try to do things. I used to make labels in Braille before I got the label maker, which is the greatest thing in the world, the Dymo tape.
Oh, yeah.
No label. I noticed the labels coming off the...
It is off of the blind handyman transport case.
One of those little cases. I've got to.
we need a new label.
Got to fix that. What time is it?
We're almost there.
Boy, we've almost done another one. Well, we are going to take our leave and take our 3 weeks off this summer. This is the 21st of June, and we'll come back and do our next show probably on the 19th of July. Maybe we can coerce. I doubt it. Don Patterson into rejoining our group. He just got tired of all of us. Maybe we could inundate him with email, begging him to come back.
He wouldn't read it.
You know, it's really funny because he was the computer guy when we first, you know, several years ago, and now he's just about quit fooling with him, hasn't he?
Got into garage building.
Got into other things, I guess, and just and now player. you're the computer man now.
Things have just shifted around.
Just changed around. So we're going to take our 3 weeks off, and I don't think any of us are. Well, I know none of us are going to the convention.
Yeah, boy, I'd like to go to whoever's convention it is in Las Vegas. Man, I'd love to be there.
It's ACB in Las Vegas. Starting on the second.
That would be
fine. Great. I've been to Las Vegas so many times. In fact, Luann just got back from Las Vegas playing in a blackjack tournament out there.
Oh man, I'd love to go back there again.
Vegas is wonderful. You've only been there once. When you went.
Actually, I went back in the 70s one time, and then back in 2000.
Yeah, so. you and Mary and the other couple. Mary Shaw, who's quit smoking, by the way.
Yeah.
Proud of her.
Those cigarettes.
Mary's in that, I'll never smoke another cigarette as long as I live. I went in the house and just laughed because don't ever say never.
We all go through it, don't
never,
we?
Yeah, we all go through it. We quit. We do.
Yeah.
Anyway, y'all have a good summer, and we're going to take our little vacation. And thank you, Tom Houston, for coming and running the board.
Oh, I enjoyed it.
Helping us out. Solo button.
Yes. Solo.
You'll never let you forget that.
Oh, Solo Tom.
Solo Tom. Don Shaw, thank you, sir. We appreciate you.
We've wrapped up another one.
We've done another, number 124. We'll see you in about 3 weeks toward the end of July. We're going to miss Cooking in the Dark. Dale won't get on this month, but maybe he'll live over it.
Maybe.
I'm Phil Farr, and I see, said the blind man, as he picked up his hammer and saw. Bye-bye.
Produced by Out of Market Productions, 1604 Southwood Drive, Lufkin, Texas. Phone 936-634-9500.